Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good morning, and no Rick Pearson today. I'm Amanda Vinicky. It is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Remember, you can give us a call. That is also a number you can text if you have a question or comment, 312-981-7200, or tweet at us at Sunday Spin. I'm joined now by Andrea Durbin. She's director of the Illinois Collaboration on Youth, and she's also helped get together 64 various social service agencies. They are under the umbrella of an organization called Pay Now Illinois. So good morning, Andrea, and why Pay Now Illinois?
Good morning, and thanks for having me. And Pay Now Illinois is simply because good business is that we uphold our contracts and we pay our bills, and we need to be paid. So that's just good business.
It seems like a pretty basic thing. So basically, the situation is that there are all of these various agencies. Can you describe what some of them are, what they do? It would be services for what? Drug addicts, providing services, helping the homeless, sexual assault victims, and all these various agencies that have contracts with the state and were supposed to have been paid basically since July and have been waiting this entire year.
Exactly. So you did a good start at describing us. We are a coalition of providers that serves people in Illinois from cradle to grave. We have folks working with pregnant women who have HIV to help them not transmit the virus to their newborn babies. We have folks working with senior citizens. We have people, as you mentioned, the Illinois Coalition Against Sexual Assault, all the rape crisis centers in Illinois, public health departments, including people with departments with grants to do lead in the water prevention, which is a very hot topic these days. Certainly mental health, behavioral health issues, addiction treatment, homelessness, supportive services, and then, of course, most near and dear to my heart, our services to young people, runaway, homeless youth, youth in crisis, youth involved in the juvenile justice system. So it's a very diverse coalition of organizations.
And Andrea, why not have these organizations sue the state for breach of contract, which is essentially what this lawsuit is, right? Mm-hmm. Individually, why the strength in numbers?
Well, I think a couple things. First of all, most importantly, the organizations are all in financial distress, right? And so coming up with the funds to individually pursue cases in court is challenging at a time when you're thinking about, or you have already laid off staff, shut down programs, extended yourself on lines of credit, things like that. So truly, strength in numbers, you see, is a way of sharing that burden. But also, I think it's important for people to note that it is a breach of contract lawsuit, and a contract is a contract is a contract. And so it didn't matter so much the populations that we serve in terms of the legal arguments, and it made sense to join forces really to be efficient. But I want to be clear, this is not a class action lawsuit.
Okay. And you know, can you maybe, I guess, help me explain to listeners? Because I think there is often a perception that all of the works that organizations such as yours provide may be wonderful services, but perhaps not those that taxpayers need to be paying for. Maybe it's a volunteer organization or a charity, but that's not, in fact, what this is. This is actually a contract where the state hasn't just said, hey, we appreciate, go ahead, keep offering these services. Instead, you literally have a contract in which these are services the state maybe once upon a time did provide or believes that need to be provided, and it's signed, sealed, delivered.
Exactly. These are contracts for essential services. As you might recall, when Governor Renner came into office over a year ago, he said he wanted to fund essential services, and he wanted essential services to continue, and that is what we offer. Collectively, what we're all doing is really helping people reach their full potential, And when that happens, the whole entire state benefits. So, you know, it, for example, when we keep people out of expensive nursing home care, that's not only does that benefit the quality of life of that individual, but it benefits the state of Illinois because we're not paying for the high-end nursing home care. The same goes for, you know, keeping people out of prisons, keeping people out of psychiatric hospitals, all that. So the work we're doing here benefits certainly the individuals, but also the community and all of us as taxpayers.
And what has the consequence of not getting paid these 11 months been? You somewhat mentioned it, but do you have any details on services lost, and would they come back if, in fact, you win in court?
Well, certainly the provider community, and I speak not just for the 64 plaintiffs right now in Payneau, Illinois, but across the board, we've seen widespread impact on the provider community, and I think the United Way has done a great job of documenting that in terms of programs lost, access to services lost, layoffs. People have dipped into lines of credit. I have at least one provider that's on its third line of credit. They've also drained their cash reserves. They have tapped equity in facilities if they have mortgages or tried to refinance. You know, if they have endowments, which not very many organizations do, you know, they've certainly turned to their endowments to help support them in this time and individual, you know, their individual fundraising efforts. But, the lengths to which organizations have gone to sort of contort themselves to be able to continue to offer services is a testament to how much they value this work and how committed they are to their missions, and we all want to keep moving forward. How easy is it to turn the lights back on after they've been turned off? I think it's really challenging, and in particular, you know, depending on where you are in the state, it can be almost impossible. One of the plaintiffs told me that they had a licensed clinical social worker position open for months because they're in a rural community, and when they finally, you know, found someone that they wanted to offer the job to, that person ended up declining because they decided to become a plumber.
A plumber,
which is great. You know, great job for somebody. And when you need a plumber, you need a plumber. But, you know, that speaks to the loss of infrastructure and capacity. You know, when people choose not to go into these professions, when they choose not to, you know, to be available to work, and who can blame them if your job security is so volatile? You know, so I think that's a real challenge. And we also lose track of our, you know, our relationships in the community when programs are shut down. There's a loss of trust there and a loss of continuity. And certainly then you end up having people in worse off situations than they were when you were able to work with them. So it isn't a thing of just like turn the lights back on and everything's good. It will take a while to rebuild.
I've heard some stories of basically lines of for more than a year, maybe, for somebody that needs treatment, that wants to speak with a counselor or receive help to get off of drugs or is an addict or something along those lines. I've heard also that, for example, the Rape Crisis Center in Champaign has shut down, and now there has been some money that came through for a hotline, but basically that if you have somebody who has been raped, they no longer would have an aide to go to, and that's in a university town, something that we'll be talking about later on the show in terms of higher education. Where have you seen those cutbacks? Do you have any other examples of services that just don't exist anymore?
Well, certainly the Rape Crisis Centers, you know, it's really unbelievable to even think about how we cannot be there for someone at what's got to be the worst moment of their lives. Yes, we have homeless shelters that have closed. We have community crisis programs for runaway youth that have closed, certainly in Englewood and up in the Rockford area. Over half of the Redeploy Illinois programs have closed across the state, and these are programs that give judges and law enforcement a community-based alternative, a treatment program to keep young people out of prison. that's been remarkably effective. It's shown to reduce recidivism by 2/3. And, you know, that's what keeps adults out of prison, right? And so the things that are happening here, you can't begin to understand them from a policy point of view because they don't make sense. I'll give you another example. Last year, the Pediatric AIDS Chicago Prevention Initiative told me that they achieved their goal at 100%, which is really incredible to think about, that they had zero transmissions of HIV from mother to baby. And wow, you know, so we worked with our family for 9 months, and how amazing. And instead, we are risking this year babies being born with HIV, not just a challenge for their own life, you know, in a $70,000 a year drug regimen, but that's a price that we're going to all pay for, right? Who pays for those drugs? And to have that be on someone for the rest of their lives because we couldn't work with them at this crucial 9-month window.
Because of a political spat. Well, we will talk more about that after a little bit of a break coming up. This is the Sunday Spin on WGN 720. And good morning, Amanda Vinicky, subbing for Mr. Rick Pearson on the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. It's 7:50, and our first guest is Andrea Durbin of the Illinois Collaboration on Youth and the Pay Now Illinois Coalition. Thanks so much again for joining me, Andrea. And we have had a caller that asked, is Catholic Charities a part of the Pay Now Coalition? And I guess I'll add on to that, why or why not? This is, again, 64 various social service organizations and entities, but there are probably quadruple that are in a similar situation that have gone these, you know, 10 plus months without any funding from the state, despite contracts that promise it, right?
Right. In fact, we are only a small fraction, I think, of the organizations that are potentially or actually owed money. So Catholic Charities is not at this time. We certainly would welcome their participation. And so as to why not, I couldn't speak for them. I will say, generally speaking, that organizations, you know, the decision to sue the government is a big one. It's a challenging thing to kind of get your head around. And, you know, for example, I talked to an organization that was in a leadership transition, and it was just something that they felt like they couldn't take on at this time. We've gotten a lot of enthusiasm from the provider community, and I think we'll be adding some additional plaintiffs in the coming weeks. And certainly we welcome providers who would like to join. I think the challenge is just in that it's a big step, you know.
Well, this is Illinois politics, and you hear about retribution. Is there a fear that maybe political leaders would say, oh, here's a list of the organizations that sued us during this tough time. We're not going to want to work with them in the future. Is that a fear, or maybe founded or unfounded?
Well, I think founded or unfounded, it certainly is a fear among the provider community. And, you know, we feel confident in, first of all, and you mentioned strength in numbers up at the beginning of this conversation, and certainly that was part of the decision to create such a broad coalition. But also we feel confident in the quality of the work that we do and the value that we provide to the Illinois, to the state of Illinois as a state, and also to our communities. And so, you know, I would hope that folks can see this lawsuit for what it is, which is just a business decision. We're just trying to be good stewards of our organizations. We're trying to get out of a role that isn't ours, which is to finance state operations. That's not our job. We've been taking care of citizens in Illinois and community residents in Illinois without being paid. we have a fiduciary duty to our boards to be paid and to be responsive to our other stakeholders. So we have other business relationships with banks, with mortgage holders, with leaseholders, with our auditors, with other funders even, to demonstrate our financial stability. And so what we're doing here is really, you know, I couldn't underline this enough. It's really just about business. This is not a partisan or political lawsuit at all.
And as you mentioned, there are other funders. Have you seen more support from outside agencies, perhaps fundraisers and such, because of an awareness of the situation that your organization or others are facing? Or many, I presume, get grants from the federal government where you need to prove that you're getting money from the state, or perhaps a donor would say, you don't seem to be in good fiscal shape, why would I want to cut you a check? Which scenario are you seeing play out?
Actually, we're seeing both. I mean, certainly there are places and stories across the state where individual donors have stepped up to ensure that some vital services can continue. And philanthropy, you know, United Ways and foundations and others have really done the best they can. I think that what we've seen, though, is that philanthropy is already contributing literally billions of dollars in support, and it's not, the capacity is not there to make up for the state dollars. And I think the challenge then is, as you point out, we are risking losing money. So I'll give you an example. Runaway and homeless youth, it's federal funding that comes to providers in Illinois. But that provider, those grants require a match on the local level. And so the state money has served as that match. And for every $1 the state provides, the providers leverage $10 in federal money. And so that $10 of federal money is at risk because the state money has not been there. And, you know, so we're in the weeds a little bit here, but absolutely it's happening.
Well, and we're in the 11th month, but the General Assembly did on Thursday approve legislation that would send $700 million to various agencies such as yours, and it would fund them less than half, but at 46% of the money that they had been expecting. Again, basically a year late, but still half the money. That, however, it seems as if it isn't going to actually become law. The governor's office is expressing some hesitancy. It points to problems with the language, says that instead the focus needs to be on a two-year budget versus a stopgap. And it's concerned about paying other bills that aren't included in this pass-through. So what are your hopes, or what are you hearing with that? What if the governor doesn't sign it? Where does that fit into either the lawsuit or the overall picture?
Well, I think with regards to the overall picture, should the governor sign this, and which is unclear, as you point out, we would regard this simply as a down payment on what is owed. And, you know, let's be clear that of that $700 million, about $450 million or so of it comes from the Human Services Fund. That is $450 million is just over a quarter, or we're owed $100 million right now, and that number grows every day. So we're owed just over or under a quarter of that money. We are, as we already talked about, nowhere near one quarter of the plaintiffs or the people who are owed money. So it's really an infusion of emergency cash. It is in no way an acceptable resolution to the budget crisis.
And we need to wrap up this conversation shortly, but just wanted to make clear, you did mention you think that there will be additional entities that are going to sign on. When and why might that be? And just any comment in terms of, as you look at this, who do you blame? Where does it go from here?
Yes, we do expect to see some additional plaintiffs joining us in the next week or so. And as far as who I blame, you know, certainly I think the blame is widespread. There was a great article this week about how this problem was preventable and it was anticipatable. Certainly, I don't think anybody thought it would go this long. But really what we need is for the General Assembly and the governor to work together to provide a comprehensive budget solution that fully funds the contracts that have been issued and that people have been delivering service under.
Well, thank you so much, Andrea Durbin of the Pay Now Illinois Coalition, seeking to get funding from the state that these various organizations are owed. Good morning. Thank you, Andrea. I'm Amanda Vinicky, and for Rick Pearson on the Sunday Spin.